Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Family Voices with Patty Barron. Today, it's my honor to have as our guest, Colonel Deidre Tahan, commander of the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. Prior to this assignment, Colonel Tahan commanded the U.S. Army Schofield Barracks Health Clinic at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. Colonel Tahan holds a PhD in biomechanics from the University of Texas and a Doctor of Physical Therapy degree from Baylor University. She's also a great friend to AUSA. Colonel Tahan, welcome to the podcast, and we are so excited to have you join us.
Thank you so much, Patty, for the invitation to be here today. I really appreciate the ability to reach out to our Army families and try to support them during this challenging time of the pandemic.
Ma'am, the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research is on the front lines of the response to the COVID-19 pandemic. What can you tell us about WEIR's contribution to the ongoing pandemic response?
Thank you, Patty. I think it's easiest to kind of think about what military medicine and Army medicine is doing to respond to this using the concept of prevent, detect, and treat. We are one of the labs of the U.S. Army Medical Research and Development Command that falls under Army Futures Command, but at RAIR, our aspects of prevent, detect, treat is what I'll kind of highlight today. So prevent is the vaccine efforts. And I know we're going to talk about the vaccines in a couple minutes, so I'll just kind of leave it there, but it really is the really critical component, since so much of the spread is due to people that don't have any symptoms, that don't know they're sick, and they're continuing to spread the disease. So the vaccine effort really is our primary effort that we have going on. Under detect, we're trying to create a whole suite of diagnostic tools to really help not only detect people that have the disease, but to know when they're free of the disease, to be able to determine if they have antibodies in their system that will protect them from getting it in the future, and also rapid diagnostic tests that we can do in much faster turnaround. Our members that work on the detect also are members of the White House Task Force to really focus on that. Part of the detect, though, is also surveillance efforts. So we have labs around the world that are doing surveillance efforts to try to make sure that we understand how the disease is characterized in these other countries. What's the genetic makeup, what it looks like. And we're doing that not only with the Army labs overseas, but our partners in the Navy labs. We're also doing surveillance efforts in our basic training sites, and our first efforts will be at Fort Jackson and Fort Benning. On the treat perspective, we're really trying to do some really neat things with artificial intelligence and machine learning to quickly down-select drugs that might be able to fight COVID-19 for people that have it. And it's really interesting technology they're using to try to find drugs that already exist that might be able to be repurposed, or new drugs that could actually be developed to fight this disease. Along all those lines, prevent, detect, and treat, you might hear the words monoclonal antibodies. And really, monoclonal antibodies can do a little bit in each of those categories. And so we have an amazing team of researchers working on monoclonal antibodies that will help with prevent, detect, and treat. But what's really interesting that people might not think about right away that's really important is brain and behavioral health. So we also have a whole line of research looking at the behavioral health impacts of COVID-19. So that's an overview of what we're working on at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research. And we're very appreciative of the ability to be here today to tell our story.
That's just amazing when I hear all that's going on and really the lead work that you're doing to help us all get through this. You know, as an RN myself, when this hit, I know that my own training kicked right in. And even though I wasn't able to support outside of my home, I certainly drove the people within my home crazy with some of the things that I thought we needed to do. And in that context, what has been your biggest surprise about COVID-19?
Well, I think there's two things that I think is really interesting. One, from a research and development standpoint, when you think of the Medical Research and Development Command, we have 7 different labs across the command, but only 2 are really focused on infectious disease research. And we really obviously been involved hand in hand with our sister lab RID at Fort Detrick on this. But because this is a pandemic, it really has leveraged all 7 of the labs across MRDC. So our TATRIC is our telemedicine lab, and they've been working on how to do virtual health. Our aviation research lab down in Alabama has been working on safe transport of patients with COVID-19. And so when you look at the AFC family, the Army Futures Command family of medical labs, everyone's engaged in this. And that's typically not how we fight infectious disease, right? We also have to think about 3D printing, and we have to think about some quick advanced development and acquisition to really help solve this pandemic. And so it's really been an amazing thing to look at the whole of government, how academia, industry, and the U.S. government has really all came together to help fight this. But I think the more interesting part for the folks listening to this podcast was really how much it is important during a pandemic to stay connected. So although we're physically separated, we shouldn't be socially isolated. And the impact of that social isolation is having a really big impact. And for some, especially if they're not in a hot spot where the COVID-19 pandemic has a huge hit on the medical system and on the people to your left and your right and your friends and family, it's the social isolation of this pandemic that might actually have the larger impact for those families not in the areas where the disease is currently replicating quickly. One of the really interesting things about research in this area is that it is a small community and it's really well connected. So you might not know, Ambassador Burks is an alumni of the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, and so is Dr. Redfield. They all came together in the 80s to fight HIV and AIDS, and they kind of grew up in the infectious disease field since then. And so what you see is a community that really isn't driven like you see in a commercial sector about profit. They really are driven to help solve these infectious disease threats and create medical countermeasures to fight these threats. And they know they have to do it as part of a team. And what's been really amazing to see is how that teamwork actually gets accelerated during a crisis like we currently are in. But really that foundation exists because no matter what you have to help fight diseases, it really requires a whole community to get after it. And that's what you see coming to light here. And I think they actually have a long history of really working well together. It just becomes a much bigger stage when it's the COVID-19.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly. And to me, the interesting part of it is, as you mentioned, a community to fight this together. We're all part of the community to fight this together. Every individual plays a part in making sure that we can beat this pandemic. So that's a great answer. I recently read an article that quoted General Perna as saying that he expects to have 300 million doses of the vaccine. They might be possible by January 2021. Of course, that's dependent on so many variables. What can you share with us about the vaccine that the Army is working on?
So I'm really excited about the vaccine the Army is working on. One of the really interesting things is how quickly we've been able to get after COVID-19. We actually have experts here at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research who have been fighting coronaviruses prior to COVID-19. So they already had a lot of expertise in this area. Some of them have actually been recognized by the World Health Organization as a leading expert in coronaviruses. So when we got the go-ahead to start, we jumped in right away with discovering a new vaccine for COVID-19. But we also realized that the disease really transitions every 8 or so years. So the vaccine we're creating is not only going to be good for the current fight against COVID-19, but it's actually going to be what we call a pan-coronavirus vaccine in the future. We really are trying to create a platform that will fight not only the past types of coronaviruses, but any future type of coronavirus by making it more universal for this family of diseases. And they've made great progress. So they've already down-selected from multiple candidates to the best one, and it's moving into manufacturing to be able to be used in clinical testing to look at safety. We expect to start recruiting subjects for the safety trial in around July, and after the 90 days when the vaccine gets created through the manufacturing process, we'll start the vaccinations and look at the safety response and the immune response to our vaccine candidate. And so far, the vaccine candidate's immune response at testing in animals has been incredibly powerful. The data are incredibly encouraging, and we're all excited. Now, one of the things that's really important is that although we are working on our own vaccine candidate, and we're doing that across our partners at the Medical Research and Development Command, we're also part of Operation Warp Speed. So we're working with the best in academia and industry to not only help get the vaccine candidate we're working on, but the ones academia and industry are working on out and successfully through all the hurdles to get FDA approval. And we actually have 14 of our team members that are actually supporting Operation Warp Speed and 3 of our members supporting the White House Task Force. And so we really want the best candidate to help protect those in our Army families. And that might be what we're developing here at RARE. It might be another product that's being developed by one of our academic or industry partners. But whatever that best candidate is the one we're going to help get across the finish line. And we're incredibly proud to be part of the overall effort to help fight this pandemic through a better vaccine.
So two things that you said really jumped out at me. The first one being that this could be a vaccine that is, as you mentioned, a platform for future COVID-type vaccines, which is great because I was worried, well, what happens if a newer version comes up next year? It sounds like great minds like y'all are thinking about that and hoping to help us with that. And the second part is the teamwork aspect of all of this and how important it is that everybody share information and also you support each other to get the very best candidate out there. Speaking of which, will service members be the first ones to receive this vaccine once you've tested it and know that it's safe?
So I want to answer that question a little differently. I think the most important thing to talk about is the fact that safety is the most critical component as we move these vaccines forward. There's a lot of requirements for speed, but I want to kind of alleviate some concerns from those that are listening that safety will not be cut. Safety is the foundation of every step that goes forward. So when you think about when it'll be available, safety is a cornerstone and it's non-negotiable. And I think that's critical to state because people might say, well, I've heard stories that, you know, it takes on average 10 years to get a vaccine out the door. Or they've heard that one of the vaccines that we worked on for Ebola, which we partnered with Merck and Merck got approved in 4.5 years. They said, well, that was the fastest vaccine ever. How are you going to have all these vaccines so quickly and still have safety? And why I want to focus on this, because I think it's really critical, is that typically because vaccines cost so much, they do one step at a time, they take months to analyze the data, and then they go to the next step. And they go very sequentially because they want to minimize cost because time is not the issue. Here with this pandemic, because of the cost it has on the economy and it has on our nation, cost isn't the limiting factor. So we actually can take, when you hear people taking risks, they're not taking risk in safety. They're actually making decisions early on so that we can get this out to people like our service members and our family members. And what do I mean by that? I call it the Super Bowl Monday decision, right? So on Super Bowl Sunday, both teams have their t-shirts ready to go, hoping that they win the Super Bowl and they can start selling it on Monday. But on Monday, only one team can actually start selling their t-shirts. So what you've seen, and you hear this in Operation Warp Speed and others, is people are starting to put things in manufacturing in parallel to when they're actually still doing the safety and effectiveness study. And if the safety and effectiveness studies do not pan out, then that product in manufacturing will be stopped at that point, and it'll be like the losing team of the Super Bowl. It just won't see the light of day. And so that is how we're able to speed this up. And when we do speed it up, we sure hope that we can get it to those high-risk populations first, protect our soldiers, protect our family members. And obviously, the Department of Defense is all in. And really, the leadership at the Secretary of Army, the Chief of Staff of the Army, and Sergeant Major of the Army, they have been leading this effort and really been putting their foot on the gas pedal to accelerate this. So I know they're really interested in being able to bring these medical countermeasures to protect not only our service members, but our families and retirees.
You hit it right on the nose as far as the concern over safety. And that was a very reassuring answer, Colonel Tahan. I do see and hear and feel that that is a very big concern and will not be shortchanged in any way, which leads me to my next question about families. And family members are right now concerned and worried about what's next, about returning to work, about returning to school, even relocating to another installation. What would you say to these families about that fear and maybe how they can feel reassured?
So, you know, when you think about your family right now, you probably have folks in your family that are fearful of this disease, are anxious about it, or anxious about the return to work. Or some people are even excited to return to work because they're tired of being at their home, or they're feeling a sense of relief that they can actually start to go back to what's all new normal. And then we have some folks that are in complete denial about the disease and its impact. That range of emotions is real. And we have to first recognize that people respond to this in very different ways and have to meet people where they need to be met. And so the first thing I would say to our family members out there is to really be patient with your family. Understand that everyone's coming from a different viewpoint, and it takes time to adjust to this new normal. Give your family members permission. Let them acknowledge that they can actually share that they're having stress with this, and give them a place to share that stress. And remember that this normal might not really feel normal, and really kind of build that team where when people are feeling stress and anxiety, they have some psychological safety to reach out to the folks to the left and right and express how they're feeling. And then really manage trust, right? And really understand that there are some public health measures that we can all take to help decrease the risk for everybody. And really holding everyone accountable to those new normals is important. And recognize some of those uncertainties. You know, you might recognize signs of stress in your family members if they're irritable, they have difficulty concentrating, they're having conflict that they normally don't have either with family members or coworkers, they're struggling with motivation, or they're making more mistakes than usual. And the thing we can really do is just reach out. Like we said, physical separation should not mean social isolation. You know, call somebody you haven't talked to, connect with a family member you haven't had, and really then celebrate the wins with your family. So if you make a win, and you've done something that you guys were fearful of doing, and you did it, and you did all the right public health protective measures, and celebrate that you've actually achieved that milestone, and really at the same time, check in with yourself. So that's the first part of my answer, is just to kind of recognize that. And the second one is to say, all right, well, what can we do about this? And I like to put it in three categories. What can we do to prevent getting infected as we start to get to the new normal? If we're feeling ill, what do we do to stop the infection and especially stop it from spreading? And what can we do to boost our own health? So under prevent infection, although we are no longer stay-at-home orders, it's still safer at home, realizing that you are safer at your house. And so you do want to avoid going out into the community unnecessarily. When we are in the community, we want to stay physically separated or physical distance of 6 feet. We know that if you are separated by 6 feet from other people, it really decreases the spread of that disease in case you run into somebody that either has the disease or doesn't know they have the disease, but they're out in public. Hand washing is incredibly critical. Washing your hands for 20 seconds every hour when you're not at home, having hand sanitizers with you, to really kind of make sure that you're not touching your eyes, nose, or mouth with dirty hands is critical. And obviously limiting travel. So those are the things we can do to prevent infection. The things we can do to stop the infection from spreading is really to know ourselves, right? Are we feeling ill? And if we are feeling ill for any reason, we shouldn't go out. So some people like to take a daily temperature check at home, and that's great. If you are feeling ill, you might be placed in isolation for 14 days until you're better. Or if you came in contact with somebody who was ill, you might be placed in quarantine. We have contact tracing teams that actually are really getting stood up and to be able to kind of reach out. And so if someone becomes ill and they name that they were in contact with you, those contact tracing teams will help give you assurance of that because they will contact you. And those contact tracing teams continue to improve in the speed of which they're contacting those folks. And obviously keeping your home and in your workplace clean. But won't surprise you, Patty, that I'm going to talk about how you also can boost your own health, and that is with good sleep, physical activity, mindfulness for stress reduction and nutrition. You know, sleep boosts your immune system. It is your secret weapon to keep your immune system strong and healthy, so getting good quality sleep is critical. Staying active continues to build your immune system, but also controlling stress, so doing things like mindfulness and yoga and stress reduction is really critical to keeping your immune system primed to fight this. And what you eat is the building blocks that allows your body to fight an infectious disease such as COVID-19. So all those things that boost your health continue to be things that you can positively do to help protect you and your family from COVID-19.
Colonel Tahan, I always appreciate your answers, and especially this one, because you've given us some very concrete steps to hopefully stay healthy. And actually, I'm going to put a little alarm on my phone that every hour will ring so that it will remind me to wash my hands. I do wash them a lot, but maybe not every hour. So that's great. And it doesn't surprise me at all that you would talk about how to take good care of yourself with sleep and exercise and mindfulness, as well as healthy eating. I would also like to ask you a question about respecting people's personal space and finding time for you to be alone. And that's what I seem to be struggling the most with. Our son, who is in college, a graduate student, is home for the summer. And my husband and I had a discussion before he came home about reminding ourselves that he is an adult and he doesn't have to tell us where he's going all the time or sit and have dinner with us all the time. You know, he has his own life. And because he's a scientist like you, he is very cognizant of how to take care of himself so that he doesn't get sick and we don't get sick. So that's one thing. But the other thing I found is that I need to be away from everyone every once in a while. We're here all the time and I just need to find ways to get away. So what would you tell families that are really dealing with an awful lot of anxiety or mental exhaustion and have tried all the things that you've outlined, but also maybe still need a little bit more?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if I back up just a second and I'll get there in a minute is, you know, really as a family unit, sharing information and really sharing with each other how you're feeling so that you can respect each other and where they're at is really important. And that sharing of information is not just psychological, but also from the perspective of the information of what you can do to protect yourself and making sure everyone understands, because you're only as strong as your weakest link. And so if you have a family of, let's say, 5 or 6 people and one person brings the disease back to the household, it's incredibly hard to keep that from spreading throughout that house. So the family's only as strong as its weakest link. And we're all relying on each other in our families at this time to keep everyone healthy. And so sharing that information is important. And what you said is really interesting because there's an importance to stay connected on this so you don't feel alone and isolated. But we also have to at the same time recognize our limits. And so when you think about that, most folks aren't, if they're used to going at home and they're used to having children at school, and now they're teleworking and everybody's staying within the house, not only are you taking on the responsibilities of your job, but you're also taking on the responsibilities of schooling in some situations or return children from college, right, that were back at the home. And we have to recognize our limits and know when we need to take a knee and what we need to do to recharge. One thing I do to recharge is run, but the thing that I really miss is swimming. I call it my blue therapy, and the pools aren't open yet. And so I haven't swam since February, and it's one of those things that is on my list to do as soon as it's safe to and pools start to open up, because we have to know what recharges us. We have to invest in ourselves to be able to invest in others. And right now, especially when more people are staying at home and people are doing a great job with knowing that they're safer at home and doing so, you also don't get away and you don't have those escapes. So you have to plan that, whether that's exercise, mindfulness, reading a book, or just asking for some alone time or taking a nice long bath. Those are the things you can do to know how to invest in yourself when you recognize your limits. We talked about resilience before, which is important in staying grounded and keeping lists, right? So that you even put on there what you're going to do this day to invest in yourself, because that's incredibly important. And know that you have someone to go to when you want to talk to someone about stress that maybe is outside of your family. Who's that friend from a while back, 5 or 10 years ago, that you haven't connected with, that if you connect with, you would feel like yesterday, and you can really gain that rapport and have an escape while also reconnecting. And really kind of understanding what you can and can't control and making sure that you're not stressing about things that you can't control and figuring out ways to just focus on the things that you can positively influence in your life to make it better right now while we all fight this pandemic.
That's such great advice. And I will say that I now take a walk after dinner by myself without the dogs, although I love them, and without my husband, although I love him too. But my son has learned bird calls for his job that he's currently involved in. And he taught me some of the bird calls. And so now I walk outside and listen for the birds, which really is very relaxing. Colonel Tahan, I'm afraid we're running out of time. As you know, I could talk to you forever. I just love all that you have to say because it's always such great information. But as we conclude our podcast today, would you have any final remarks for our audience?
Yeah, thank you, Patty. And that is a great message, is to go on that walk alone. Not only gives you physical activity, but mindfulness, listening for those birds and being in the moment. That is phenomenal. I just ask our amazing folks across our Army to just again recognize that both our soldiers and our family members that serve are in that top 1% of Americans, and you invest more in our country, and we're just so appreciative of all that you do. At this time, we just need to take time to invest in ourselves, invest in our families, and invest in our families' health and safety, and stay connected with each other. Really reach out to those folks from prior duty assignments and reconnect and share memories and really kind of leverage some new technologies. You know, like with traveling, there's all these travel sites where you can explore virtually a location that you wish to visit in the future. So you can kind of do some escapes when we really can't get on long plane rides or travel freely. And figure out through that, what's really great about that is when you do the virtual travel before you actually do it, it increases the anticipation of the trip when you do take it. And it actually increases the enjoyment and the overall satisfaction of it. So doing a virtual trip now for something you're going to do in the future not only gets you the ability to plan for it when the restrictions decrease and this pandemic ceases, but it also increases the enjoyment of that once you get there by doing it virtually first. So invest in what you can do now, knowing that that will pay off in the future.
That's fantastic information. And I actually think what I will do is I will virtually visit the other islands of Hawaii so that I can go back and really enjoy my happy place, which I also know is your happy place. I love the islands. Colonel Tahan, you've been a fantastic guest and you're such a great friend to AUSA and to me. Thank you so much for joining us today. We just are always so happy when you can.
Thank you so much. And just everyone, have trust. Everyone's working really hard to get medical countermeasures out there to help defeat COVID.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Army Real Talk. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association. Member supported, Army connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Pua.